Welcome to the Digital Government Podcast. Tune in to discover the future of governance and ways of getting there.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Digital Government Podcast. I believe, actually, the last mile before we get to the e-governance conference 2024. The e-governance conference 2024, indeed, it is happening quite shortly. And coming up very soon, May 21st, 23rd in Tartu, Estonia, online and offline, as the usual hybrid format tells. And today, to introduce, let's say, as this, as I said, the last bit, the last steps before we get to the conference, to introduce yet another panel that is going to take place during those days, is Nele Leosk. Nele Leosk is Ambassador at Large for Digital Affairs at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Estonia. And she's joining us today to discuss and introduce the topic of uncovering the potential of digital public infrastructure, which is also the name-like panel at the upcoming conference. So, Nele, welcome to the Digital Government Podcast.
Hello, and nice to be here.
It is your first time here, but it's not your first time in the rooms and areas of the e-governance conference, let's say. So I'm looking forward to seeing you again physically, and people instead who will not have the chance to see you physically can do that online at 2024.egovconference.ee. But today, essentially, there are some aspects and there are some terms that I have already introduced, and that definitely you are the fittest person to explain to us and to shine a light on them. So even before getting to the point of unpacking a little bit the definitions that that make digital public infrastructure and the development that happened lately, I said exactly that your role is to be the ambassador at large for digital affairs in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Estonia. So, ambassador at large and ambassador for digital affairs. Yes, diplomacy, but also tech. So, could we call this tech diplomacy? And if we could call it this way, what is tech diplomacy? And why countries, for example, have appointed, let's say, officials in these positions, and aimed as well to increase their positioning and standing, let's say, in terms of tech diplomacy.
Thank you, Federico. I think you started with a question that I am most asked. So what do tech diplomats do, and what is the difference between digital, cyber, tech, and so forth? And sometimes they are used as synonyms. So we can see digital ambassadors that deal with tech, digital, and cyber, and the other way around. But maybe shortly to summarize it. Previously, digital would deal with everything bright and cyber would deal with everything dark. But I would say that in current times, these distinctions are actually not that clear cut. So what we see is actually we see the emergence of previously separate lines of digital and cyber, because it's not that easy to say since when, let's say, the risks of artificial intelligence have impacts on our security, and since when they have impacts on our economy and democracy. So maybe just to give a bit of the background, I joined the ministry 3.5 years ago, and when I joined it, I would say that digital diplomacy was still quite young. We didn't see that many digital diplomats. I would say that cyber was more prominent back then. But when we look now, every EU member state has a digital ambassador. They are strengthening their units. European External Action Service is strengthening digital diplomacy. So we can say that it is becoming a mainstream. And to understand why, we have to a little bit see also the context. Because digital development, so let's say the technology, it develops really, really fast. So this also means that these 3 years or 4 years that I've been in diplomacy, relatively speaking, it's a very short time in diplomacy. But when we look at tech diplomacy, actually a lot has happened, as I was also referring to before. And it is because of the nature of digital technologies that do not recognize borders. So on the one hand, it's really great thing. It brings globalization, everybody can win from these technologies, even if these technologies are not developed in their countries. And I believe the country Estonia, where we are all going to welcome a lot of people soon, I think it's a great example of what very small country can become much bigger than it is. It was really the technology that helped us to transform from, I would say, low-income country to high-income, very democratic society. But increasingly, also, digital diplomats actually talk about risks. And what we have seen increasingly is a concentration of these developments in very few countries, and I would say increasingly in a very few companies. So this puts several of us, including Estonia, under pressure. So how do we make sure that our people, our companies, everybody that lives in our society has these necessary skills to make use of the technology so that we all can benefit from this? So I would say that this is definitely one, if not the main aspect of why more and more countries see technology as a foreign policy or geopolitical issue, because it increasingly is so. And the second reason is actually quite simple. There has been, we are into, let's say, 20, 30 years into this fast digitalization. But instead of seeing the divide decreasing, we see it increasing. And this is also something that Estonia is very active in, how to making sure that we, our partners and countries from all over the globe can step into digital development. And and the third one, which I believe became very evident recently, is the role of private sector. I would say even by private individuals, if we look, for example, who is behind providing, let's say, Starlink services in Ukraine. And this is a new situation. This is a new situation for governments where the power of private sector may outweigh the power of governments. It's entirely new situation for all of us. So to answer to your question now, finally, what do tech diplomats do? I would say that, and it may seem as a slogan, but there is quite a bit under the slogan, is to make sure that we all benefit from technologies, but that we all feel good in this virtual environment, that our privacy is protected, that we are not victims of disinformation, misinformation, and that technologies are not, let's say, misused by any of the partners.
And I think that, like, when you say all, like that we all, that's probably one of the terms that I would use as a hook, let's say, to actually introduce then the topic of the discussion that you're going to join at the e-governance conference, and also the and also something that you already have, like, touched upon, let's say, in your introduction, and better in your introduction, in your first response, actually, and then which is exactly the aspect of public, no? So when we say we all, and when we say DPI, like digital public infrastructure, and when we say DPGs, digital public goods. So the term public is the one that is the recurring one together with digital. So digital public something, digital public this. First of all, I think this is interesting to notice just from a semantic and words-based point of view, which is the fact that the two words digital and public are going together, and that already, like, signals the fact that it exists a digital space that goes beyond the single device, you know, that each of us has in their own hands, and the use of internet that each of us does. So there is an internet public space, and there is also exactly a digital public infrastructure, as there are also digital public goods. But what are these? So let's lay out a little bit of a definition. What are DPIs? What are DPGs? And what's the relationship also between them? Because the two things are connected.
Thank you. I think you stepped in other, I would say, in this sense, a gray area, that there are so many definitions currently spreading. There are some developed by the UN, different countries, private sector, and so forth. But before perhaps going to definitions per se, I would still bring out the aspects that you just mentioned. And this is the public, so the core understanding what stands or supports digital public infrastructure. In Europe, we use the term digital commons, digital public goods. It is precisely this understanding of the role of the government. So it's in a way to give back to a society everything that it does, and laying the foundations for a society to function. So to bring a parallel, let's say, with a physical infrastructure, we have roads, we have bridges, we have infrastructure that we all use for our everyday functioning. The same way, we need infrastructure to build our digital society. And in this sense, this openness, sharing, and I would say also co-creation and reuse are the foundations of digital public infrastructure or digital commons or the other way we name it. Of course, the term digital public infrastructure, I would say, is rather new. Perhaps 3-4 years, we have seen really this term trending. But I would say that it doesn't stand in this sense so to something very new in digital. So I would summarize it as a new term for digital transformation or digital governance that puts a focus on some very core aspects of digitalization, which is openness, interoperability. And I would say that increasingly it puts the focus or the emphasis on the basics. And I have to admit that I like it because we see new trends emerging: blockchain, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things. So all the time, some very I would say high level developments. But we forget that we cannot step into AI or Internet of Things if we have not fixed these basics. So data governance, data sharing, data interoperability, digital authentication, digital identity, these are all the basics of digitalization and the core of DPI, or digital public infrastructure. Maybe to bring the distinction between them, I would say that digital public goods generally refer to concrete products, usually open source products that can be reused, X-Road, for example, or some other solution that is there and that can be reused. And digital public infrastructure, here it varies. Usually it refers to, I would say, some foundational DPGs like identity and data. But we here have conceptualized it a bit wider. So for us, the DPI is the entire ecosystem that supports the development of the use of digital public goods. It can be legal framework, organizational processes, skills, but also infrastructure.
The digital public goods, or better, a system of digital public goods can contribute to the making of a larger digital public infrastructure, if I get it right. Would you adjust this type of interpretation that I have attempted, please?
Yes, it's pretty well summarized. So,
okay.
I think the DPI is in a way like the entire system that supports the use of certain products or solutions.
This actually, why I was summarizing it in this way, for a couple of reasons. First of all, because on the last point that you made, I remember how some years ago when Siim Sikut was like government CIO, there was this trend, let's say, when in tech talks in general, Estonian officials would get asked pretty often, you know, like, okay, so you've done so many things now in the digital sphere in such a short time, what's now the next thing? And I remember thinking very often, I was like, but that doesn't need to be a next thing. Like, let us get in place, you know, properly, the ones that we have at the moment. And this was reapplied as well to the work of eGovernance Academy in many places worldwide, where obviously, you know, there are many people in governments worldwide who want to embark on a journey of digital transformation, and they see a lot of very new shiny things and pieces of tech, or like For example, we spoke about this once with Heiko Weinsalu of the Governance Academy as well. They see some buzzwords or they hear some buzzwords and they're like, but this thing is cool. Could we maybe find a way like to integrate it in our like a strategy or like in our technology and stuff? And instead, exactly, the digital public goods that fundamentally help making a country's digital public infrastructure most often happen to be very fundamental and key enablers and things, such as exactly you mentioned digital identity, but there are also interoperability platforms, for example. So something that I would like to ask you in that sense is, you've mentioned a few examples, no? But next to that, there is also another topic, which I've heard, like a word actually, because today we're doing it a lot about words. So we have the digital public infrastructure, the digital public goods, but then also there is a topic of the commons, no? Like, what do we refer to when we use this term within this field?
So the commons, or why we often refer to DPI as commons, is that it puts more emphasis exactly on this very core principle that everything that the government does is to be shared. Everything that we also other partners do needs to be shared. Like Wikipedia is a perfect example, or one of the main examples of the commons. It really captures this, I would say, the democratic development. But because it is indeed so that digital public infrastructure may at times become very technical, or really focusing only on data governance or digital identity. And it may actually shift the focus from these democratic values. And we have also seen that. But why it is topical, I would say that, as you were also mentioning, from time to time, we see the emergence of new terminology. I guess we all need it. And in a way, that is... it's indeed so that it gives a new push. We have seen mobile governance, smart governance, connected governance, open governance. So I would say that now is the time for DPI. But all of these different terms that have merged, or these trends, they emphasize something. Like smart and mobile emphasized the emergence of mobile, the need to go mobile. Open governance strengthened really the participatory side of digitalization, not just services or administrative effectiveness. But I would say that there are also some very practical reasons. I think 20 to 30 years into digital development, we have come to realize that our problems and our needs are actually not so different. We need all to authenticate ourselves digitally. We need to share data. So there was this understanding finally that we do not need to create a new solution or reinvent the vehicle, let's say, every time. So we could actually share. And why Estonia is one of these reference countries for DPI is that this is how we built our digital society. We have one digital identity. It is shared by private sector and public sector. It's used by everybody. It is very common here, but it's not that common in the world. So I would say definitely this understanding is one of them. But of course, there are also others related to sovereignty. Let's say a lot of duplications, development of systems that actually don't talk to each other. So I would say after some years of practice, several governments have realized that they have invested in systems that are very separate, that they don't talk to each other, and ultimately do not help them in building, I would say, user-friendly services. So these are probably the main reasons.
What was, let's say, some recent piece of news, maybe, or like story, or a digital topic in general that you came across, and that really like made you think, this is like the perfect moment to pull out the topic of DPGs?
Yes, I have to say that I see it all the time, because with the new trends of DPGs and DPI and the commons, what has happened that a lot of governments, but I would say also private sector, has started to develop open source solutions and have made them available. I would say we know hundreds of repositories around the globe that are all available. What we don't see as much is actually the reuse of these systems, or even, let's say, adopting or developing further these already existing solutions, not alone as a local municipality, not alone as a country, but together. And this is something that comes from everywhere. Let's take identity or data sharing or registries or payment systems. There are so many of them. But what I would perhaps like to stress here is that whether it is a DPG or not, so whether it is an open source solution or not, it is not really the technological solution per se that makes the implementation of it successful or not. So I am pretty sure that by now, all countries and all organizations have introduced digital identity in one way or another. But we don't see so many successes. And it's not really because these solutions were not open source or not. The reasons are somewhere else. It's related to politics, skills, infrastructure, and so forth. Just like in digitalization, also in digital public infrastructure or commons or whatever we refer this, let's say, the new trend to, it's not a technological issue. So this means that whether the product is open source or not is not the main reason or determinant of the success. It is still how you put that solution into use, how you implement the solution, whether it is open source or not. Of course, open source having its benefits that we have also talked about here already today, but it's not the main determinant.
And benefits themselves are also not the only thing that is involved when we talk about DPIs and DPGs. So something that I would like to know now is, because we spoke a lot about successes, but now you have introduced the topic of not success, let's say. So what I would ask you is actually, what are instead some challenges? Because I'm sure that there are, you know, while as beautiful as everything sounds when it comes to, you know, sharing and the digital public spaces in general, you know, and what makes those spaces, governments or companies, as you have also mentioned, still find obviously challenges, let's say, on the way toward adopting or like writing down, let's say, in a strategy, the formula of this kind. So what are some of the most recurring challenges that you have seen that governments encounter toward choosing and identifying what are the key DPGs that they need?
Okay, some of the challenges are similar to any digitalization, but some of the challenges may be indeed specific to DPGs, let's say open source solutions. And I would say that some of these most commonly referred to challenges, sometimes they are myths, sometimes they are not. But maybe just to summarize here, of course, one is sustainability, because any government needs a certainty that this solution or the service that they want is secure and it's sustainable. So it's just not the matter of this year when we have this open source solution available, or next year, but it's really sustainable. And here I believe Estonia and Finland really nailed it when they established the Nordic Institute of Interoperability Solutions in 2016 to guarantee the constant funding and management of X-Road, which is an open source interoperability platform that that now Estonia, Finland, and also Iceland develop together. So definitely this is one of the reasons. The second one is related to trust. It is often so that we don't trust the solutions that come from somewhere else. We want to make sure that we know exactly how they have developed, what is behind it, and so forth. But the third is very much related to a local capacity. There are countries that do not have that issue, but there are many countries that don't have locally a capacity to adopt and implement a solution. And it is very difficult if nobody is supporting you. So in this sense, also open source solutions need support in implementation. So it's not really just take it and start implementing it.
It's not just like plug and play, let's say, in that sense.
No.
Nele, to close it off, we have this upcoming panel. We're going to talk about uncovering the potential of digital public infrastructure. You are going to be there. So who is this panel for?
I would say that this panel is for everybody who is interested in digitalization. So I believe that everybody who is going to be at this conference is exactly the right audience to listen to something new and perhaps something not so new that we still need to be sometimes reminded of. But what we will hear, we will actually hear quite a bit about what is DPI. There is quite a bit of confusion. People don't know what it really stands for. So we are going to, let's say, open the context, but we are going also to see some of these examples. European Union will, let's say, reveal what they are doing in the area. I will talk a bit about Estonia, but also about the global landscape. And we will have also the IT minister from Nigeria introducing what they have in mind for the future.
Nele Leosk, Ambassador at Large for Digital Affairs at the Government of Estonia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
May 21st, 23rd in Tartu, Estonia, physically and also online in the usual hybrid format that we're used to, you'll get the chance to tune in and see all our experts, all our panels, and essentially also all the people that we have slowly introduced through the episodes of the Digital Government podcast in the past couple of months. And me as well, actually. So the appointment for all of us and for all of you listeners is with the e-governance conference 2024. You can check all information once again at 2024.egovconference.ee. And that's it also from us for today.
This podcast is brought to you by the e-Governance Academy. Tune in next time.